Welcome to Love Amped, an exploration of healing others through healing ourselves. Check out loveamped.com for additional resources and support.
Love Amped. Hello, friends, and welcome back to Love Amped. I'm your host, Seth Pearson, and this week we're talking with Louis Hong. That's right, the wonder child himself. We're going to be talking about how he became a free thinker, what it's like to grow up with a family that's rich, figuring out, is money evil or is it another form of love? I don't know, but we're going to find out how this man turned into an absolute beam of sunshine and his thoughts on that process. Enjoy.
All right, I've been waiting to make this happen for a long time. I'm super excited. It's late night morning show with Seth Pearson and Louis Hong, brought to you by Loved Amped.
Tonight. Here we are! Louis, you've been awake for 1 hour and it is 5:30 in the afternoon. Holy smokes.
I have excuses. It's very deliberate. It was very deliberate.
Don't we all have excuses, Louis?
But this one's excuses and deliberate logic is different for me. So for me, I spent all of yesterday learning about Martin Luther King, reading up on my friend's comments about the recent police brutality and Black Lives Matter. And I spent the entire day learning until 4 a.m. And I woke up at 8 a.m. today. But science has shown learning is set in stone when you sleep. If I only slept for 4 hours, that meant I would have forgotten most of what I've learned yesterday. And that would have been brutal to wake up and be like, I wasted all my time yesterday because I didn't press save on my documents. So I made sure, I forced myself when I woke up at 8, I'm like, no, this is not enough sleep. I'm going to lose too much. So I just went back to it. I forced myself to go back to it.
Wow. Good for you for continuing to sleep and take care of yourself in that moment. Dang. Yeah. Dang. Louis, what if you had to say in 2 minutes the summary of what you learned yesterday, something that you think others might not know about, what would that be?
Martin Luther King spent his entire life for peaceful, civil, and nonviolent changes. But now we all know this, but near the end of his life, he actually did seem to come to terms with the inevitability of violence in change. Now, this is very radical, and this was very near the end of his life, like the last year before he was assassinated. So I'm still coming to terms with what that meant, because Martin Luther King was an obvious great thinker and great leader of change. So to have spent his entire life promoting nonviolent changes, only to have to eventually have this coming to terms with the inevitability of violence is something that I can't comprehend, and that's the summary of why I spent so much time reading and learning, because it is absurd. I live in Bellevue, and the day before yesterday, I didn't know there was a protest. All I heard were bang, bang, bang. Like, what? I look down, and there's just people on the streets. Like, I'm looking at Bellevue, and I just see police, so much police, so much people just running around on the street, tear gas, and fire. Imagine just like being a normal day and just looking outside your window and just seeing what the hell is going on. What? And apparently people have been rioting and looting Bellevue Square, looting it like bare, like breaking into the windows and just taking everything and breaking all the businesses and smashing the windows of the buildings around me. Luckily, not mine for some reason. I'm very lucky in that regard. I don't know why. So there's something to think. I mean, there's no conclusion. If I had a conclusion, the world would be so much simpler. It's something that's right. What's happening here is near trolley problem. It's people are arguing for all sorts of stances, but I'm going to pretend that someone is arguing that looting is required. That like this rioting is a form of free speech. To that person, I would say these businesses are built by people that want to provide for society. Now, this is a great segue into a topic that I do want to talk to you, which is money is a currency of love. But these businesses around Bellevue have a long history, and they've built to provide for people like me that live here. They work hard. It is their art, it is their craft, and it is their livelihood. And a lot of these are mom and pop shops that I visited over my 5 years of living here. To see it all smashed up, and then people argue that this is for the greater good, is a hard truth for me to digest. It is to have someone smash up my favorite shop and be like, you can't be upset because people are being brutalized by the police, especially black people. Like, that's a trolley problem for me. Like, I know the people that set up that shop. There's no reason that can ever justify you doing that to their shop and stealing everything. So it's near trolley problem. And it's the reason it's hard to conclude is because, you know, you can't find a solution for the trolley problem.
How would you describe the near trolley problem for those that don't know what that is?
Okay, so the trolley problem is you're on a railway, you have a lever, and it redirects a train that is coming towards people tied on the train track. Now one turn has more than one people on it. You know, let's imagine 10, and the other side has one person on it tied to it. And you have the lever that gets to choose whether the train gets to run over 10 people or the one person. And there's a lot of, you know, alternative versions of this. Like, one's your mom and then 10 of them are strangers. Or one person is really fat and the other people are, you know, 10 skinny people. Or, you know, or you get to push someone off to the train track and that person will... You know, you get the simple problems, all the permutations of the simple problem, eventually you permutate enough where it imitates real life. And what we have right now with the looting and rioting and people arguing for its inevitability and its freedom of speech is a very complicated permutation of this very simple problem of just a train track, one person versus 10 or more than one, and you have the lever.
That is truly complex.
It's honestly not complex. It's just very difficult because it's a simple problem. You know, you pull the lever or you don't. You can argue that if you didn't touch it, it's not your responsibility. But yes, it's...
How would you pull the lever in this case if you were thinking about yourself?
Okay, let's do the classic one of one person versus 10. I mean, I would probably pull the lever towards the 10, but the one person. I just said 10. I'm an absolute murderer. But I'm still murdering that one person,
right?
And I'm still responsible for killing that one person as much as I'm responsible for saving the 10 people.
And how about in this case, when you see in this situation in life happening right now?
In this case, I really don't get to pull any lever because people are already smashing up the street. But yes, at the end of last night at 4 a.m., or probably a little earlier than that, it does come to the epiphany. Like, I did come to an epiphany after talking to my friends and reading about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and reading about, learning about history. I didn't actually read the history, which makes it credibly ambiguous, but that a lot of changes happened because of violence, the eventual inevitability of violence, you know, like gay rights, lesbian rights apparently happened because of a violent protest, and black people's freedom from slavery, a lot of it did come down to very violent protest from the Malcolm X side. So that's what am I doing now? I'm just a thinker, a speaker. Thinking is hard. Speaking is hard. I mean, you would know, you're a coach. So like thinking is very hard. It's hard work to get to the truth of this world. It requires sacrifice. You know, all of the great thinkers of our generation, even outside of our generation, are quite, they, you know, MLK ended up assassinated, Malcolm X was assassinated, Jesus Christ himself was assassinated or crossed. You know, Plato, one of my favorite philosophers, was also publicly killed on trial. The first person that discovered that the sun is in the center of our solar system was burned to death, and et cetera, et cetera. All the witches, all the scientists that were, you know, so being a free thinker is different. Being thinking for yourself is rigorous, difficult, and requires sacrifice of your friends and families and sometimes society, because you got to tell the people, the one person's family, that, you know, this is not going to work out. Your son's going to end up killing 100 more people, if not more. So I'm sorry.
And yet, do you think it's important to stay free thinking and think for yourself?
Yes. Yes. I think if the world had more free thinkers, more educated free thinkers, it would be utopia. I think news outlet is the perfect, I'm going to subvert what I may sound like. It's the perfect sin of a free thinker to sit down on your couch, crack open a beer, and just listen to someone else think for you and pick the lowest hanging fruit. You are not in control of your life, because you're not in control of your thoughts. To arrive at your own thoughts, you need to think for yourself, and then you can decide, because it is yours, whether or not you're going to keep that or destroy it whenever you want. And that control is a control over your life and a control over your decisions.
So it's almost letting others control you.
Who are we other than, what is free will if you're not even thinking for yourself? If you're just picking the lowest hanging fruit from Facebook, you know, pop up on Twitter, the first, you know, verified Twitter account says something, you're like, that's fucking it. That's it. You don't think about, like, the thought requires hours of thinking and logic and building up to that point. You cannot take the conclusion and because it sounds good, you take it. You cannot.
Right.
Because you're
right.
It's not yours.
Exactly.
It's not your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What would you say in this scenario is someone taking that low hanging fruit?
Oh, regarding this recent Black Lives Matter police brutality.
Yes.
I don't have much faith in the entire system. Like I for me to arrive at a conclusion, I take time. I don't endorse anything that I haven't thought through yet, which is dangerous because a lot of great things in life require faith. A lot of great things in life require that you just believe. You don't have enough time to figure out how to be happy in life. Unfortunately, there's a lot, like, sometimes you just got to have faith. in seeing someone else being happy and just believing, okay, I see that they're happy. I see this is how they live their life. There's a good chance if I, you know, believe in them and listen to their wisdom that I'm going to arrive at, you know, a place of my own that's just as happy. But I don't have a conclusion. I think both sides are heavily influenced by social media. And I'm not very happy about anyone's stance because none of them have really spent the time thinking.
Do you think that there are only two sides?
No, I don't. There's people currently, I mean, just to list out the few main ones, which is more than two. There are people that believe that this is just utter nonsense. Police are fine and smashing up businesses are just straight evil. There are people that think looting and rioting are not part of the protest. They're just outsiders. Whoever that does violence is not part of the protest. And only the people that are peaceful are part of the protest. So people that are angry, you guys are angry at the wrong people. We have something to say. And, you know, there's another side that's like looting and rioting is part of this. Like, this is the whole point. Police are bad. We're trying to create chaos to let you see. And then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, I don't think there's only one. And the reason that the truth is so hard is because it's never, you know, everyone thinks that they think alike, but you're just picking the lowest hanging fruit. Everyone arrives at that in different ways and most completely unrigorously and self-conflicting. And you know when someone hasn't spent their time thinking because they're going to say something and then five sentences later, they're going to say something completely different that just benefits what they're talking about right there, but it conflicts with what they said before.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Lewis.
Yeah, Seth.
Within 5 to 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
so that other people have even more context between our relationship, what was your life like before we met each other? And what was your life during our time that we spent closer to each other? Mm-hmm. And how has it been afterwards?
Oh, okay. Let me give myself a self-introduction. I am Lewis Hong. I'm a kid that was quite antisocial, quite introverted, and not very outspoken. I grew up pretty rich. That's a very, you know, a specialty. I grew up moving a lot. And that gives me a lot of perspective on things and puts me in unique situations, but also distances myself from any of the local truths, which is why I feel like I think free. It's because I'm never attached to any culture or any ideology of that culture. So that's where I came from. Money is a big part of my life. And I looked up to Steve Jobs as a kid. That's where I came from, looking up to Steve Jobs and thinking, I want to create something. I want to be that cool. I want to have that amount of power over my life and society. So I worked really, really hard. I didn't make any friends. I thought everything was a waste of time. That's the worst part. I thought everything that is not programming and learning about technology was an utter waste of time. I remember my parents wanting to go out to get food and me saying, no, I do not want to waste time on dinner. That was not a good spot to be in. Just think dinner is a waste of time with your family, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where I came from. I didn't have any friends. I basically had social autism. You know, I would meet someone and I wouldn't know how to talk to them. I wouldn't know how to express my emotions, and I was fearful that if I expressed anything, it would be radically different. Because, you know, I was radically different because I moved every 3 years as a kid. Now, this starting from elementary school, starting from kindergarten, you know, so I was very reserved and hidden. And now, as you can see on the other side now, that I am very outspoken, I'm very honest, I'm very straightforward, and there's a certain confidence in what I believe in now. So when I met you, our story begins on 2019, exactly a year ago. Probably exactly a year ago, if not a year, a month ago, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is hot off the stove. This is your dear apprentice that might have gone evil. Seth, I am your apprentice. I feel like I have the right to say that, even though, like, you know, you've never officially recognized me as an apprentice. But I haven't
said it out loud. Lewis, you are my apprentice.
Oh, yay.
Thank you.
Thank you, teacher. Thank you. Seth, the wise one.
It's an honor. It is also an honor.
So it was 2019. I was exiting my senior year, which is the year I was supposed to graduate, but I'm taking 5 years at DigiPen because of how hard it is. And DigiPen was also, as you know, not the place for you to solve your social autism.
Definitely not.
So I've came out of DigiPen in defeat. I'm senior. I didn't graduate. I failed many classes throughout my career. I see the individuals who are getting amazing jobs, and that's like happiness stolen away from me somehow. You know, that jealousy, that's not even deliberate. And I came in, and I'm gonna tell this story. It's almost corny that, you know, the first day that I went to work to where we used to work together at MXT, you were like, "Lewis, give me a hug." You were so warm. You looked me in the eyes and was just smiling at me. And you were like, "Lewis, come in here. Give me a hug." It was beautiful. It was more beautiful than what I realized at the moment. Because, you know, I didn't think that was the beginning of something that was going to change my life. But I was very taken back, I guess. And to think more logically about it, there was, like, I don't know why, you know? Retroactively, I understand that is something important that inspired the change in me. But, you know, I didn't even get to know you yet, Seth. This is the second time we've met. It's like we've met for 10 years already. Hey, buddy, aren't you amazing? You don't know what I've done in the past and how many classes I've failed. You don't know about my failed relationship that's been going on for 3 years up until that year. You don't know about the bullying that's been happening ever since I was a kid. You don't know about my pain, and you don't know about my struggles, and you don't know how bad at socializing I am. Practically, as someone that interviewed me, you don't even know how bad at coding I am. You don't know if I'm good for the job. You know, there's a bunch of these thoughts in my head, like before, like that would keep me from ever doing that to someone else up until that point. Why should you give this person a hug? You don't have answers to all that questions. You don't even know if they're a murderer, you know? I mean, if you have that question, you probably shouldn't give them a hug. You know, at that point, you might not want to make that happen.
Yeah. But,
so that was the beginning. I don't know the specifics, not gonna lie. Like for me, it was just happiness from there on. I think just the energy that radiates off of you just naturally rubbed off of me. And of course, asking for advice, life advice, and getting your input, learning your way of thinking and your history and how you grew up, and seeing you and your social circle was inspiring for change, because I had none of that. You loved your friends, and you actively, you know, organized events and in engage and put yourself out there and engage with society. That was different. And the way you loved people. I'm sorry. I'm not the coach here. If I had the specifics, I would be the coach. I was the receiver. So I don't know what really happened there.
I love this. I mean, from my perspective, I saw you begin to learn how to process your emotions and release a lot of inner shame and limiting beliefs and letting in new experiences and thoughts that were more positive for yourself, that in that process there's a constant kind of like letting go and taking in. And I saw you find the almost the like savior and caretaker archetypes within yourself, with how you operated in romantic relationships and finding like a healthy balance within there. I saw in that like letting go of the limiting beliefs that you were able to understand that you are a social person, that it's not that you let go of that identity that I am not social, I can't socialize, and that I like that you need to find that almost like that positive energy and love within someone else to like give that to you. And like you also identified with being a broken person, and that's again where it showed up in certain relationships. It seemed like you seeked that with someone else that also identified with that, so that you could both like be in that state together of like almost like victim mentality. And I think like the greatness that you already had, you just didn't know how to see it. And the amount of pressure that you put yourself upon, like you talking about Steve Jobs there, you had that pressure to become Steve Jobs in my eyes. And the fact that you were 22, I think at the time, and not already like have a company that's extremely successful and running a business and stuff, was like this perfectionist, unattainable catastrophizing of like, I am a failure. And of course with DigiPen, you had so many people, as you said, to compare to, of like, these people have great jobs, great jobs, great jobs. And I'm like, and you haven't even like graduated yet. And yet you like landed this dope internship at this like virtual reality and augmented reality company that's like doing stuff for the Space Needle and like the UK government. And even then, there's some like, oh, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? So, I mean, just need a little bit of self-love, Lewis.
Yeah. So that's a great conclusion of what I went through then. From your perspective, I couldn't have put it in that much detail and intricacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, so that's, and from here, like, and since then, as you said, like, you're very outspoken, and you, how I've seen you on, was it company day or career day at DigiPen? What was that day?
Are you talking about internship fair? Maybe. Oh, company day. Oh, company. Oh, yes.
That I got to see you and how you now operate in DigiPen, in that college environment. Mm-hmm. And you are a fucking like sunshine planet of just like bursting energy. Like, not only like now and like right on this like recording, but like in like actual space. And like, I can see it, like, you're just like just shooting it out, and like how you even like carry your ukulele around and like just like do. And just like, you were like in, you were able to be yourself and be a light for others, like that others can see that, oh, like Lewis is doing something, like maybe I can do that. Have said now that you make friends like no problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This was in, that transformation happened. I mean, of course, it's been a year since then, but that was probably, what, 3 or 4 months of intense work that you're continuing.
It was the happiest summer of my life, without a doubt. And I left off, you know, living a life like you just described, and it was inspiring to other people. Like, I would not be able to articulate it in the way that you have for, you know, looking at someone else, but just the way of how much confidence and freedom I have after that, people looked at me and like, wow, this person's really got it. I mean, like, you know, they really know what makes them happy in life, and they're just doing that. There it is. There's the story.
What an honor. Lewis, why do you think that money is love?
Okay. So money is a big proponent in my life. I don't know if that's the right word. Money is a big part of my life. Because growing up with really successful parents was also one of the reasons why I had to look up to Steve Jobs, because I really wanted that love from my parents. You know, I wanted that, like, look, mom and dad, I'm going to be as great as you guys, you know, you guys. And living in a, you know, very comfortable home that I did not pay for is, in a way, a huge fucking pressure on me. You know, I didn't pay for any of this. It was given to me. So I had all my life to come to terms with money and what it meant, because I had this thing that nobody else had sufficient enough, you know, sufficient amount of, and it was defining characteristics, because I had all the nice things in life and I got to move around, and everywhere that I moved around, I was richer than the rest. So that's my background of why I have some credibility to my thinking, and I've thought a lot about what money meant. But my, you know, a lot of the common consensus or the common feeling around them regarding social media thinking, again, is that money is, you know, evil. Money is this thing that's exploited, and if the world didn't have money problems, or if the world didn't have money, we'd all be happier somehow. You know, when you say money, it almost has a bitter taste to it when you say the word money, cash. Cha-chings, you know, the green stuff.
Yeah.
You feel it. There's like a bitter taste in your mouth when you're thinking of money. Can't go on without saying, like, there's a big economical divide between the extreme poor and extreme rich, and that divide is growing. And that hatred towards people that have earned that status is overwhelming. You know, I hear the word "eat the rich" all the time on social media, like from close friends. Like, you know, they would post something and they would hashtag "eat the rich." I am who they're talking about, and I don't want to be eaten. That is striking fear straight into my heart. And that makes me worried for my parents, because there's this hatred towards money, as if the more you have it, the more hate you have. See how, like, the common consensus that why there's a bitterness in it. It's not, for most people, it's not the currency of love. It's the currency of evil. It ties straight into why people are burning businesses down and not feeling bad. They're like, big corporations, fuck them. Burn them down. I don't even feel, you know, a droplet of guilt, because these are big corporations. Fuck them. So that's where we are at right now. Mm-hmm. And I've given a hint that these businesses are built by real people. Like, I know my parents, I know their colleagues, I know their peers. You know, I've been meeting these ultra rich people all throughout my life. And to build a business that large, you cannot imagine the amount of sacrifice they had to go through. You think you can do something that big without realizing that the business you're building is solving real problems? You know, the nails, you know, from small business to your nail salon down the street, the owner of that, you know, had to give up their job at some point and risk their livelihood and open up that nail shop that you just smashed up, you know, eat the rich. But, you know, let's talk about bigger corporations, which is what my mom and dad deal with. To build something that big and unify that many employees together and make the make the entire chain work, you know, you have to invest in R&D to figure out how to get shipment, how to get storage. So we did, like, one of our business was one of the biggest fruit businesses in China. You know, my dad ordered like near 100 books stacked up in his bedroom one week, you know, 100 books. And there were all books about how to keep fruit fresh. And he went through that entire pile of books in a single week. And by the end of that week, he was the top leading expert of keeping fruits fresh and refrigerated properly and shipping it refrigerated in the entirety of China. Think about what that means for the Chinese people. People that couldn't get the fruit fresh and delicious, or couldn't get the variety because it was grown somewhere far away, now can get fruit because my dad developed this technology of storing fruit and shipping fruit refrigerated in China. Think about how much happiness that has brought to the world, you know. Chinese food in America. 10 years ago when we came over here, there was no Chinese food. I mean, there was, you know, American Chinese food. There was no Chinese brand, like actual, like Chinese people would recognize, oh, that's the Chinese food that I really trust. It was just random restaurants. And maybe you'll hit one that's good every once in a while. So we came over here noticing that, oh, wow, all these Chinese people here are suffering. Imagine if you are an American and you move to China and you can never have a hamburger again. You know, you can never have a good pizza again. And then someone came to your town in China and opened up the best pizza shop that was exactly the way you liked it when you were back in Seattle. Tell me that that person did not give you love right there. That their time spent trying to get the talent to China, you know, investing and risking their livelihood, learning, was not love to you. That when you give them that $20 bill for that food, that is not love in exchange back. And look, and the thing is, the money that you give to them, without realizing that money was your love. You worked somewhere and you benefited someone to receive that money. You know, if you work at retail, thanks. You helped me buy stuff. You know, if you worked at a pizza shop, thank you. You made pizza. You made my day better. You know, if you're a life coach, thank you. You changed my life. You know, that was love given to me. So that's what I think what most people don't see in money. Now, it can be exploited. Mm-hmm. Like anything can be exploited. A hammer that can fix a bridge can also kill a person. You know, a gun that can save a life can also kill, you know, take away a life. It's not in the tool that it's evil. It's kind of in the people. But money is not meant to be something that's supposed to be exploited.
So would you agree with the statement that the world would be a better place if all of your friends were rich?
I have some amount of reserve about human nature, you know, because it shows up in the animal kingdom. It shows up in humanity in exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, what I think the world would, rabbits' lives would be better if there were no wolves. You can imagine that, right? Like, is that perceivable? Like, would it be rabbit utopia if there were no wolves? I think the rabbit would fuck out of control and eat the entire planet. So humans are not that much, we think too highly of ourselves and we think we're that much above animals, but look at us, what we do, we are very much animals. We are, not only is our DNA 99%, you know, 99.5 or something percent close to other animals, like chimpanzees, we also behave in very, very similar ways. So, would it be better if everyone is rich? I say that is...
Everyone would be your friends.
If every single one of my friends are rich, would that make me happy? Yes, that is... I'd say if they're my friends, they're under... If they're my friends, they I have verified that they are not animalistic, and therefore they've earned their money in a way that benefited even more people.
Right.
So yes, if changing, you know, if it was my friends, then yes.
So what do you think is a great way to get that message to your friends that you want them to be rich as well? How can you inspire that in others?
I would go through exactly what I just was talking about first, you know.
But how would you inspire them, not just choose?
Oh, not choose friends or choose.
Like, I'm saying now, like, you agree that if your friends were rich, the ones that you have, like, kind of filtered through your own process, that the world would be a better place. So besides sending this podcast episode to them, mm-hmm. how can that message get out there?
To my friends.
That yes, that it is to the world's benefit that they also seek to be open to the idea of being rich, not in terms of making themselves happy. I want them to, I would hope that they achieve that first, finding fulfillment, mm-hmm. and also then pursue making the impact through becoming more wealthy.
Hmm. See, I would, first off, again, I would say exactly what I just said, you know, for the past 5 minutes, which is dissecting how money came to be. You know, it was giving your neighbor a potato when they had an extra corn cob. That's the origin of money. Mm-hmm. So I would explain the origins of money and how it actually works and removed all the misconceptions. Mm-hmm. But then I would say something completely different, Seth. I would say don't look at money. Do something positive and create something that would better people's lives. You know, when my dad and mom has by far enough money, like, we would be off for generations and generations without a hitch. That's the, like, but at that point, my dad is not doing it for money. My dad is just like, you know, I can do this. I'm so smart and I have so much education and so much friends that if I wanted people to eat better fruits, I can. Now that might seem far-fetched and out there, but I'm sorry, the answer is just do what you love and in a way that benefits other people. Have that deep in your heart that when you're making that pizza formula, you're not thinking about that payday at the end of the day. Like, oh, my pizza shop is going to get Michelin star and I'm going to be so rich and it's all going to work out. No, be in the moment. I love this pizza recipe. I can't wait for my customers to try this delicious new tomato sauce that I've just specially made from homegrown tomatoes.
Yeah.
People are like, when people line up at your businesses, when people line up at pizza shops, you are not paying, like, they're there begging for your love. When someone lines up at a restaurant, that's a lot of suffering to be sitting in the seat for an hour, you know, or 30 minutes, depending on, you know, how well your restaurant is doing. But when you give the world enough love, when your pizza is delicious enough, people will line up. The money, like when you're trying to be rich, most people end up not being rich because you get the wrong idea. You know, I can convince, like if I wanted to be rich now, there must exist a way where I can convince everyone in my building or everyone in that building to each give me $1,000. I know there exists a universe where Lewis went out there and did that I can just convince them, just, you know, like a stock, like a Wolf of Wall Street, you know, I can just convince you, give me $10 million just through talking, you know. That's what most people think money is. Oh, if I just built the right reputation and just like do these specific things and follow this manual and look the specific way, people will just hand money off of you. You don't understand that these investors have done this for a long time. They're not there to just, you know, just because you did this. They see, good investors see love in people. They see the passion for their craft. How much Steve Jobs wanted to change the world because he knew this iPhone would do it. He was compelled once he saw the vision. And once you're compelled, money just comes to you. People see your vision. And they just, you know, so long story short, I would never tell my friends to aim for being rich. I would tell them to just do amazing things and that they love, and in the ways that created more love in the society.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Wow. Wow. You hear that, folks? You hear that?
Thank you.
Bring love out into the world. Be open to receiving what comes from that. I mean, I'm in on it. I'm so in. Now, Lewis, you remember the story I posted yesterday? That's how we got into this whole thing within 24 hours.
Yeah.
When you saw that post, how would you describe what I said? How would you describe that post?
Yeah, I felt compelled to send you the message because it seemed like it was something that was, like you said yourself, it was something that you had to work on. Am I right? It felt like you said, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to watch it again. I really need the exact statement of what you said.
Yeah, go for it. Actually, try to play it so that it shows up on the mic. So others can hear it.
I'm currently improving my mindset with money and making sure that I'm able to make the biggest impact in this world as possible. So if you're with me on that, let me know. And if there's something that you see wrong here, let me know.
No, I'm not going to lie. It's the second part that compelled me to message you.
Do you want to, are you able to play the full thing?
Oh, it was a two-parter, huh? I don't have the first part. That was the second part. It's a story.
I think I'll be able to play it if you can't find it real quick.
Okay.
Hello, friends. It's another beautiful day in Seattle. Some people are writing and some people are super privileged and reading about making money. So check it out. Do you have this negative belief about money that you can be spiritual and rich at the same time? Let's look at that. If you identify as spiritual, wouldn't it be great if you and all of your friends had a lot of money to change the world for the better? What's negative about that? I'm currently improving my mindset with money and making sure that I'm able to make the biggest impact in this world as possible. So if you're with me on that, let me know. And if there's something that you see wrong here, let me know.
Okay, there's the full story. Lovely stuff. Lovely stuff. I like how the positive energy radiates off of you in your stories. But I did respond to you because you said, if you see something wrong, let me know. Because it's for the exact reason I just talked about. If you're looking at money in the eye, it's like looking at the sun with your bare eyes. And, you know, it's, you're going to end up very poor if you're just looking at money. That's the weird paradox of money. The more you look at it, the more blinded you are, and you make evil decisions that don't benefit you.
And then on kind of the opposite side, you would also say that if you also completely disregard it as a form of love, that you may also not end up in a very good position for yourself.
You can't escape currency. Like, money is a very contemporary word, but you cannot escape currency. Like, going back to the potato and corn on cob farmers, like, there was no cash there, but that exchange of, oh, hey, Bob, your wife wants potatoes, but you didn't plant potatoes this year. And my wife wants corn, but, you know, I didn't plant corn this year. That exchange made both families happier. So, to answer your question, no, money's not evil. In fact, it is the currency of love there. Like, you've just, it was the exchange of potatoes and corn was like, made everyone happier. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I'm just worried that if you're focused on, oh, all my friends are rich, so we're going to be happy. A lot of people have tried that. Too many people have tried that.
Right.
And that's the main problem with society right now, in my head, is that people look at the result. Money, an excess of money, is a result. It is a result of greater things that you will not see, because people not flex how hard, I mean, they do, but you in movies, when, you know, when the characters are working hard, it's always a montage with like, duh. Dun, 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 dun. That takes 99% of the time.
Yeah.
That montage, if that was real life, that would be 99% of the movie. And then what you're seeing is the 1% of what they receive. So there is no easy way to money. It's 99% of that. Imagine listening to that for 99% of your life. Is that you have to consciously choose that life. An excess of money is not free. There's no cheat to it. And if you think there's a cheat, you're going to end up very poor. Mm-hmm. So that's why I messaged you. I was like,
Absolutely. Wow. So, okay, Lewis, we have about 5 more minutes until right. I'm going to get on a call with my dear friend Beth Moon, which I can't wait to. Mm-hmm. What are some final words on self-love that you would love to share?
I will never do your job as good as you. I mean, I hope I aspire. I'm your apprentice, Seth. I hope eventually I'll you know, be able to articulate it as well as you have. But,
oh my gosh, your articulation is so great. Like, that's the thing. Like, Lewis, you are doing it. Like, there's no question about it. About the idea of trying to get to my level or whatever. You're on your own game. You're on your own path of like,
to articulate, to look at someone and articulate their feelings as well as you.
Okay, cool.
You know, that the empathetic feelings. But what I want to share in the ending moments, the wisdom I've picked up after leaving your apprenticeship. And it's from, apparently what people tell to drug addicts, like hard drug addicts, like, you know, the highly addictive ones. It's, I believe, honesty, succumb to the outcome, and do uncomfortable work. It sounds weird. It takes some time to dissect, but in short, you want to live an honest life. You don't want to live in fiction. If you did something that you felt bad, you tell to the person that you know, that can be affected, that you did that, you know, and you succumb to that outcome of telling them. Like, if you were a bad person, live up to it. It's okay. You're not a bad person anymore. If you want it to be. But hiding that away and living in a fiction, I don't know. It harms your soul to live in that fiction. It's weird. If you do not come straight with yourself and you live in your own fiction, that emulation of that fake self, it takes all your energy away. Mm-hmm. So that's my closing statement. Be honest, succumb to the outcome, and do uncomfortable work.
Love it. Lewis Song, everyone. Holy hell. This has been amazing. Lewis, I love you so much. It has just been a joy to have you in my life, and the things that we're going to continue to do together are pretty epic, really. And like, you know, we haven't even really fully talked about what that's going to be. And that's exciting. And yet we both know. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just like another, gosh, I mean, the importance of mentorship and menteeship, mm-hmm. protégé, as Sean Walsh said. it is undeniably, it's never a one-way street. It's always a two-way street. It's a two-way. I have grown with you as much as you have grown with me. So
thank you. I love you, Seth. It's been an honor. I've always wanted to be on your podcast. I'm glad this is the opportunity has finally come. It's been a year of just like anticipating. Yes, this is so cool.
Exactly.
Thank you for inviting me.
Ooh, you're welcome. Okay. And here we go. Signing off. Till next time.
Till next
time. Love yourselves out there. Woo.
Love and
I am absolutely honored that Lewis wants to be called my apprentice. How incredible is that? How unbelievably fortunate am I to have someone in my life that considers themselves an apprentice to me? Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, we do want to say there's definitely some crazy shit going on right now. And I just want to say two stories. I remember when I was younger, maybe 5, and I found out what racism was. And I was like, what? What is the point of that? Where did that come from? One of my favorite friends, almost an admiration from afar when I was that age in elementary school, was my friend D'Angelo Davis, African American, someone that I thought was so freaking cool. I remember we hung out one time at his parents' place. I was just like, this guy's the coolest. And then fast forward to 8 and a half, when I met my oldest friend that I met in elementary school is Paul Komoto. I love this man to death. I think I talked to him on the phone maybe 3 weeks ago or something like that, very briefly. And then I was fortunate enough, fast forward to, gosh, I think I was 20, 21. I think I was 20, yes, when I met Nelson Reed. one of the most important people in my life. It's on the podcast as well. And it sucks that there is inequality still happening. It sucks. And it's a very, very complex problem. And the story continues. When I was 25, I went through the Mankind Project New Warrior Training Adventure. And there was this moment where I had to write down who my heroes were. And I had two that I wrote down. One, Ken Bonin Jr., my mentor for life, and MLK. And that really, really put things to perspective. And I want everyone out there to think for themselves. There's no one right way to support the fucking world. So don't let others control you. There's movements happening right now. And I want you to ask yourself these questions, if you so choose. Am I allowing myself to be controlled? Am I acting as a victim? Am I acting from a place of empowerment or disempowerment? And what's best for me right now? Once all those questions are answered, the next question might be, how can I support everyone in my community the best of my ability, not in a way that someone else tells me to? And how can we create the greatest good that we possibly can? Because how I do it might look a little different. Might look a little different for a little while here. So thanks for sticking with me. Love yourselves out there.
This was Love Amped, a podcast by Seth Pearson. Check out loveamped.com for more info on today's topic.